So let's reach over and see if we can access Dr. Boyce. Let's say a very special good evening, Dr. Rene Boyce. Good evening.
Good evening, Gretston. How are you?
As usual, not too bad at all. This Sunday is no different. We had some rain today down my side. Did you get any down your side?
It was a bit challenging down my side. I have some videos of my phone of us trying to get through Spikestone and to get further north. We had to turn around, cars stalled in the road and everything. Mm-hmm. So there was quite a bit of rain in the north.
And there was hardly anywhere I am currently.
But we made it home.
Currently. Yes, you did. You made it home. So I'd be glad to have you here.
Yes, it's great for me to be here. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Better Health Radio Show, helping you to live a better life. We have a wonderful guest this evening, as usual, and we anticipate a very, very exciting show. I say every week, and every week I'm going to continue to say it. But I have two shout-outs to do, and let me do those and get those out of the way. But before we do that, remember, if you want to give us a call in the studio, 434-1790, that's the number to get into the studio. And if you want to send us a WhatsApp, you're a little shy, you don't want your voice to be heard on radio or you're at work, 266-4862, and Gregston will be able to feed us those WhatsApps. So the shout outs, I always wonder if it should be shouts out. Rather than shout outs, but
we'll go
anyways,
with shout outs.
I was just being facetious. Yes. Go out to Abiola and her daughter Aaliyah. So, Abiola and Aaliyah, they listen every Sunday or most Sundays, but she said that they listen in all the time. So, thank you to our listeners, to all of you who do tune in every Sunday to listen to us. And Miss King, she's also logged on already. So good evening to you as well, Miss King. Great to have you on with us. And today I have as my guest, Dr. Kristen Curtin. She's a wonderful friend. She's a colleague. And we are going to be discussing diabetes. And you asked the question, why diabetes? Why again? Aren't we tired hearing diabetes? It's because we still have a significant burden as a result of diabetes. So we're going to discuss it again in a different light, as you will see. So good evening, Kristen, and welcome.
Hey, good evening, Dr. Boyce. How are you doing?
I am doing great. It's great to hear you. You can probably hear the laughter in our voices. You'll see as the show goes on. We are going to be discussing diabetes, but a little bit about you, Kristen. Tell us a little bit about you.
Well, thank you for having me first thing again, Dr. Boyce. A little about myself. I'm a physician here in Barbados. I graduated from Cave Hill, Faculty of Medical Sciences in 2015. Completed my internship at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital in 2016. And then from there, I went a little bit on joy run, I would say. I worked in several capacities, different places. Amongst those, I found my two joys, I would say, which are working with patients who have diabetes and also covering cricket, the Pride cricket team. Shout out to those boys, or shout out, should I say.
Right. So Kristen is well qualified, having completed some postgraduate degrees in diabetes and some other postgraduate degrees as we go on and we will discuss diabetes. So before we get in, one of the questions that we're going to ask you to call in the answer, one of those questions is, yes, one of those questions is, please tell us four symptoms of diabetes. And today we're discussing type 2 diabetes. We're not discussing type 1 diabetes, which is one that more commonly is seen in children and younger adults. We're talking about type 2 diabetes. So remember, that's the question. We're going to ask you to call in a little later on. So start working on your answers. The question is, name four symptoms of diabetes. So Kristen, we are doing basic diabetes. We're going from the beginning and we're going to build up all the way to treatment. So what are the risk factors? Why is it that one person as opposed to somebody else, why would this one person get diabetes? What predisposes them to diabetes?
That's an excellent place to start, Renee, and especially for us being in this Black Caribbean population. So there you have the first one, right? So the risk factors are things which put you at an increased risk of going on to develop type 2 diabetes. So we have the things that we can change, which we call modifiable, and the things that we cannot change, so the non-modifiable risk factors. So some of the non-modifiable ones would include ethnicity, so certainly Black, Caribbean, basically non-Caucasian background is a risk factor. After that, you have age. So the risk starts to increase from age 40, but definitely from 45 upwards, you would find that your physician is going to start screening and looking for type 2 diabetes, especially. Then you have the family history to a certain degree that is debatable, but that is also something that we can't do anything about. So that falls under the non-modifiable category. A bit of a combination going between the lines of modifiable, non-modifiable would be gestational diabetes. So certainly women who would have experienced diabetes in pregnancy, we're on the lookout as general practitioners a couple of years down the line after they would have given birth, just to make sure that they don't go on to develop type 2 diabetes because they are at increased risk. The big things that you hear about often, these are the things that you can do something about, and I'm sure that's what we're going to dive into at some point in time. And you know where my interest lies, sports and exercise. So I have to make a mention to physical inactivity, so not taking part in regular activity on a daily basis or on a weekly basis. There's obesity or being overweight, and we like to put the emphasis on having fat mass around the stomach, right? More so than the waist, that puts you at increased risk. So those are just a couple of them. Certainly also when you have other chronic conditions such as high blood pressure, we also tend to look for, we would say, the cousin thereof of these conditions, because they tend to travel as a pack, you know. So from the time you hit overweight, you have high blood pressure, you have problems with cholesterol, you're going to find that your physician is on the hunt to make sure that you haven't developed type 2 diabetes as well.
One of the things that we hear in Barbados, and I figure it's something throughout the Caribbean, maybe throughout the world, is that sometimes persons don't think that they're overweight, or more importantly, persons don't believe that they're obese. So we make that distinction using the body mass index between being normal weight, overweight, and obesity. And sometimes there's been debate about whether or not it is a useful tool because of the differences in height and body habitus and so on. But really and truly, a lot of information can be gleaned from the body mass index. So let's talk a little bit about that, because it really does have some bearing on our discussion here this evening.
Yeah, I certainly agree with you. You would find in the academic world, we like to interpret BMI or body mass index with respect to the population. So we treat BMI a little differently in terms of the scales, how you interpret normal, overweight, obese, a little differently if it's a Caucasian population, or let's say if it's an Asian population, because we would appreciate that Asians are naturally of a smaller body habitus, they're of a smaller body type. But I do definitely agree with you. Barring any significant muscle mass, say in a bodybuilder, you can get a lot of information from the body mass index. So the BMI is something that is calculated. It's a pretty straightforward mathematical calculation for those who like a little math. Or you can just Google it, as we all do. And there are many BMI calculators out there. All right. So what we do, we take your height and we take your weight. So we take your weight in kilograms. So for anybody who's out there listening, feel free to do this. We all have calculators on our phones, right? So we take your weight in kilograms. So most of you might know it in pounds. So to get from pounds to kilograms, divide that number by 2.2. So I'll give you a bit of a chance there. So take that weight that you have in pounds, divide that by 2.2. That gives you your weight in kilograms. And then now we move on to your height. So fortunately for us, our ID card bears our height. Hopefully it's correct, right? So some people complain that it isn't, but we tend to use it. So we take that height, we take your height in meters. So say your height is 1.7 meters. We square that, which means 1.7 times 1.7. And we take that answer and put that answer with the weight in kilograms. So whatever your weight is in kilograms, divide that by your height times your height. And that's your BMI.
So Dr. Curtin did say that it was a very simple calculation, and sitting down here listening to dividing by 2.2 to get from pounds to kilograms, and then squaring your height after you have to convert it from centimeters to meters. Like she said, you know, just Google it. But what do the values...
Google it and put it in the calculator.
Yeah. So what do the values tell us?
Right. So the values tell us really if you are in the correct ballpark. And I like to use ranges. So that's why I say ballpark. If you're in the right ballpark for your weight to match your height. So for example, the numbers you get, if your BMI, if your number you get, let's say for argument's purposes, is less than 18.5. We call that underweight, right? You're too light. You tend to see that in persons with eating disorders. You might see that in super athletes overseas. I remember when I was in Massachusetts, and at a conference, they mentioned certain cases of persons trying to get to goal weights. And sometimes it's a little imaginary, but that's where you might see it sometimes. So BMI less than 18.5 is underweight. The normal is between 18.5 to 24.9. That's your normal. That's your sweet spot. And then the overweight, which is where most persons like to think they are, is 25 to 29.9. So overweight, 25 to 29.9. That's the classic Bajan. I just have on a little size kind of thing. And then obese is above 30. So why we differentiate between overweight and obese, you're saying, well, everything's above normal. Why we differentiate is because once you hit obese in particular, you're at risk for further complications. So complications such as cholesterol issues, heart disease, diabetes, right?
Yeah, diabetes and hypertension are cousins, and obesity is that cousin you don't want to invite to the party. So if there's anybody that you can leave off the guest list, let it be obesity. So earlier we had said that we wanted persons to call in with four symptoms of diabetes. So the phone lines are open for that brave person who is going to attempt to give us four symptoms of diabetes. Kristen, we have anybody who sent it in by WhatsApp as yet?
Yes, I'm looking at one here. It says, thank you. Four symptoms of diabetes are frequent urination, excessive thirst, weight loss, and fatigue. That was one WhatsApper's answer to your question. Did you hear us?
Okay, and that WhatsApper is, yes, we heard you. Okay. And that WhatsApper is correct. So those are four symptoms of diabetes. Kristen, go ahead and list a few more as they fly off the top of your head.
Before Dr. Curtin goes ahead, there's a caller here. Good evening.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. The doctors can hear you, please.
Yes. Four symptoms are numbness and tingling of feet, wounds that won't heal.
Go ahead.
Infections and sexual dysfunction.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Dr. Boyce.
Very good job.
You were my doctor one time at the polyclinic. Have a good evening.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, caller. Go ahead, doctors.
So I think we could put those two together.
We got eight
of type 2 diabetes, right? So we like to call them the polys. So polyphagia, which is where you're hungry, excessively hungry, especially for sweet things, excessive thirst, excessive urination, wounds that won't heal. We could get into a bit about why that happens later, because the body loses its ability to fight off infections correctly. Blurred vision as well, weight loss can occur as well, sexual dysfunction, as she correctly said. So we just hit most of the major ones that persons present with. And those are them right there.
Yes, and we're going to put a plug in. We know that generally speaking, men do not have wonderful health-seeking behavior. They tend to present later in illnesses. They tend not to pay adequate enough attention to their health and to their checkups and so on and so forth. But if it is one thing that will drive a gentleman into a doctor's office, is sexual dysfunction. And that is one of the ways that male diabetics present to the general practitioner. So for those couples out there, if you notice that there is some difficulty on the side of the male partner, and we're remembering that there are children who might be listening to the radio, but actually we have to be able to speak to our children as well, but that's another program for another time. Make sure that you get that gentleman to have a physical exam done, and maybe we can be able to prevent some of the consequences of diabetes, which we are going to discuss a little bit later on. And for those of you who are just joining us, it's just past 6:15 in Barbados and across the Eastern Caribbean, and we are in on the Better Health Radio Show with Dr. Kristen Curtin, and we are discussing diabetes and all of its sweetness. So Kristen, let's talk about the way we diagnose diabetes, because I think one of the things is here in Barbados, one of the phrases that we hear is that I have a touch of sugar, which I believe is an injustice because it lends to persons not taking their diagnosis as seriously as they could. So let's talk about how the diagnosis is made.
I like that. I like that introduction. I have done actually a talk a while back entitled A Touch of Sugar. So that's excellent. So how we diagnose diabetes? We diagnose diabetes with a blood test, right? And there are three types of blood tests. There's the fasting blood sugar level. So fasting means that you've had nothing to eat or drink for at least 8 hours before you present to the doctor's office or the laboratory. They take your blood, they spin it immediately. And for that, we look for a value of 7 or more to diagnose diabetes. And we usually say that we want 2 lab readings, right? Some guidelines say within about 2 weeks. Some guidelines say it's physician dependent. So 2 blood tests with a fasting blood sugar above 7 or higher is a diagnosis of type 2 diabetes. What's the other way you can do it? Another type of blood test. It's not as regularly done in the private setting, but there's something called the oral glucose tolerance test, OGTT. And that's a fancy term for saying, let's challenge your body. Let's see how your body handles a dose of sugar, right? So just to tell you a bit of how it works, normally when we have something to eat and it contains sugar, we would expect that our blood sugar would rise. But after an hour or two, we expect that it should be trending downward. So we do a blood test, we take a baseline, and then we check your blood 2 hours after being given 75 grams of sugar. It's very sweet. That's what the patients tell me. It's very, very sweet. And 2 hours after, and apparently it tastes bad as well, but 2 hours after, we check your blood sugar level. And if that is 11.0 or higher, then that is also diagnostic, or that tells us that you have type 2 diabetes. Again, we would repeat it in about 2 weeks to confirm. The growing way to diagnose diabetes now, especially as we do point of care systems, so that means doing tests that can come back in real time in the office, is something called the HbA1c. And the HbA1c is your glycated hemoglobin. So what that means is that your blood sugar, your sugar is actually tacked on, stuck on to your red blood cells traveling around the body. So normally speaking, not much sugar is added on to those blood cells that are circulating. So if we find that you have a lot of sugar tacked on to those red blood cells circulating about the body, that's how we also diagnose your type 2 diabetes. So that value for HbA1c is 6.5% or higher. The last way to diagnose diabetes, so all of those cases, I want to picture to you, the person is stable, they might have come in for a routine checkup, you've done these lab tests as part of their annual work. But suppose like those two callers, the WhatsApp and the phone call, suppose somebody comes in with symptoms, and we're saying these symptoms sound like diabetes. So if you have symptoms of diabetes and we do a blood sugar check and you are 11.1 or higher right there and then, we don't need to wait for a second lab test. We're going to diagnose you right there and then with type 2 diabetes. So those are the things that I want persons to be aware of. So the fasting is most common. HbA1c is excellent as well. And then, of course, if you come into the office, you have symptoms and we check it right there and it's 11.1 or higher, you have type 2 diabetes.
One of the things that I'm very passionate about is education. Giving persons information for no reason other than having knowledge in your head is a complete waste of time. you need to know your values. You need to understand what your values mean. So it makes no sense that you have a glucose machine at home and you're sticking yourself at any random time you get a value and you just continue doing what you were doing before. The purpose of being able to test at home is to, in the case of those persons who use insulin, for example, to adjust your insulin as necessary, for other persons to be able to determine whether or not you are on the right track in managing your diabetes, and for physicians in conjunction with the patients to determine what's the best track, what's the best type of medication and lifestyle change for you to use. Let's talk about the values of the HbA1c, or local target. And I really do like the HbA1c because, and I know that the physicians as well as yourself, Kristen, can attest to this, where the week before persons are supposed to come back to their appointments, their blood sugars are pristine. Fastings are between four and six, and they're 2 hour. The ones just after 2 hours after meal, they're down by 7.5. And you're thinking to yourself in the middle of mango season that this person is doing such a wonderful job. And they're sent for their HbA1c and we get a 9. You can't trick us. You can't trick us. So tell us what these values mean, where we want the HbA1c to be.
Yes. So HbA1c, as I said, is a reflection of how much sugar is tacked on to that red blood cell. And the red blood cell is alive for about 90 to 120 days. So it really reflects how much your blood sugar control has, how well your blood sugar has been controlled over the past 3 months. So I just wanted to reflect that. And that's why if you come in with pristine values 1 to 2 weeks before your visits, we're going to find out what the previous 8 to 10 weeks really look like. So what are the values? So 5.7 to 6.4% we call pre-diabetes. If your HbA1c falls in that category, again, with two tests. If you're 6.5% or greater, we call that type 2 diabetes, and less than 5.7% is, of course, normal. Now, I wanted to make mention before I just go on a little bit about HbA1c, is that the touch of sugar reference comes from persons who tend to fall within that pre-diabetes landscape. And there's growing talk in the literature about trying to move away from this term pre-diabetes because it gives persons this false sense of, no man, I'm good. I have some time. It's not full on diabetes yet. So this touch of sugar has made its way through the landscape. And I want to tell people who are listening out there that if you do have this touch of sugar, this pre-diabetes, this A1C between 5.7 and 6.4%, that you are in prime position for lifestyle modification. You're in prime position to do something and try to reverse or delay the development of type 2 diabetes. So that can't be stressed enough. For those who have type 2 diabetes, I'm sure you're doing your best to find out more. That's why you're listening to the Better Health Radio Show. And you want to know, well, where should my numbers be? And how often should I be checking? Because my doctor doesn't check that often. So remember, as I said, because the blood cells are alive for 90 to 120 days, we don't need to check every 4 weeks. We're going to wait for those cells to die and replenish and get an idea of what the fresh picture looks like. So monitoring for A1C is usually done every 3 months if we've made a radical change to your treatment regimen, or it can be done every 6 months, or if you're stable, you can do it every year. So don't go complaining to the physician if you're only getting it done annually. There might be a reason for that. What should your target be? So you have diabetes, where should your numbers be? So this is dependent upon the individual, and I like to push individualized care. So if you are young, you're fit, you have no issues, as we said, no hypertension, no heart disease, you're not frail, then we want your HbA1c to be under 7, and sometimes I even push for less than 6.5%. As you get older, as you have complications, we tend to say, well, your control doesn't have to be as tight. That term might be thrown around. It doesn't have to be as exact. So you might see a granny who is 80 plus years old. We're going to be satisfied if her A1C is 8%, and we're going to say that we're winning. the battle. So it's all patient dependent, but generally speaking, if we had to choose a number, less than 7% if we had to choose.
We still have that call on the line, Gregston.
I believe we still do. Good evening.
Good evening.
Yes, we still do.
Anthony Hope calling. I want to say good evening to you, Mr. Seely.
Yes, sir.
Good evening to the other doctor. I'm not sure what's her name again.
Dr. Curtin.
And good evening to the good leader.
Dr. Curtin.
Boyce, how are you?
I'm doing well, Mr. Hope. How are you doing?
You know, I'm medically unfit, so I'm always not doing so good, but I'm really doing the things in terms of doing good work that I should not do. I'm trying to do them all the time. However, there was something that I always thought about, and I want to ask if this can be applied. How much does the glycemic index of food help to regulate diabetes type 2, or is it a way of trying to regulate and control diabetes type 2 by knowing the glycemic index of foods?
I will since Dr. Curtin is the expert, I will let her answer that question for you, Mr. Holt.
Excellent question. Is it Anthony? Anthony, is it?
It is.
Yes, please. Yes, please.
So glycemic index is... Yes, Anthony. So glycemic index comes in very handy with type 2 diabetes especially. So glycemic index represents, in simple terms, how easily the food that you eat, the carbohydrates that you eat, the energy foods, how easily those foods are broken down into sugar and get into the bloodstream. And you would find that the issue in diabetes are eating foods, consuming foods that cause spikes. So when we say spike, we mean as soon as you eat them, the blood sugar skyrockets. And foods that do that are foods that are of a high glycemic index. And right at the top of the list are things that Bajans like the most. So we have, please, bakeries out there, don't come after me, but this is the truth. So white bread is a culprit, white rice is a culprit, and English potato, the good old tasty French fries. Those three things, and I have patients to prove it would come in and say they show you a value, and I'm sure, Renee, that you have experienced this. When you see certain values in the morning, patients can tell you, oh, that was the mashed potato from last night,
mm-hmm.
right? So, Anthony, to answer your question, yes, glycemic index is important. So you want to eat foods. If you have diabetes, you want to tend to eat foods on the lower end. So those are things like your ground provisions, in Caribbean terms, so those are your complex carbohydrates. And what that means is that the body takes a while to break those down. And because it takes a while to break those down, it takes a while for the sugar to get into the bloodstream. And therefore, you kind of prevent those spikes that happen after you eat. So your breadfruit, your yam, your cassava, all those good old things that our grandparents made us eat, those are where we should be right now.
So you're still there, Mr. Hope, I hope.
Well, what I was saying is, Doc, they don't have to come after you. You can tell them if they look for the published chain foods of glycemic index, they will see them right at the top. So they don't need to come after you.
Yeah,
they will see them.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hope.
No problem, Mr. Hope.
Thank you. And Doctor, before
you go on, Grayson,
Go ahead.
Right, no, I wanted to put in a plug here for the patient-centered approach to healthcare, where it's no longer a system where what the doctor says is gospel and law. We as doctors, we advise, we give advice, we help, we guide, we assist, but ultimately the responsibility of a patient's health, that responsibility lies in the hands of that patient. And the same example that Mr. Hope gave is a useful tool. We have access to the internet, there are pamphlets at all different places, the government information service, there are a wealth of information. You can look up those foods which have a high glycemic index and you try to avoid those. You know, Kristen was being very delicate when she spoke about white bread and white rice. No, salt bread, sweet bread, right? These are the things that hit home for us as Bajans, and those delicate turnovers and jam puffs, right? The current slices.
Well, I was trying, Dr. Boyce.
Don't try.
I've got a call on the line. Good evening. You're still with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, kindly hold for me, please. And then we've got another caller who is trying to access us as well. So you please stay on the line as well. But before we get to those two callers, yes, hold on, please. speaking of all the things we shouldn't take You were mentioning the bread just now, but this WhatsApper is asking, good night, doctor. And they mentioned a soft drink. I'll just say soft drinks. Can soft drinks do someone something with diabetes? That's your question.
It can do a lot of things.
I know that, but I want you to tell them that. They're asking.
They can do a lot of things. So.
Mm-hmm. And one other thing before you go ahead, Doc. They said, can soft drinks do something with diabetes? That's one. And two, when outside is hot, can your sugar drop? That's the second question.
Okay, so the first part, can soft drink do something to your diabetes?
Mm-hmm.
And I have a throwback question to that person. If they do have diabetes and they have access to a meter, I would say the proof is in the pudding. So I would actually check your blood sugar, have a glass of whatever soft drink it is. We won't call any names, and you can check it. Usually we would wait, but I can actually say check it within an hour to 2 hours. Have that with your meal, look at the difference, and then have the same meal without that soft drink and look at the difference. The proof is in the pudding. So soft drinks are sugar and water, all right?
Christine, before you go on, right? Mm-hmm. Having been on the receiving end of misunderstandings, let me just clarify for the listening public that Dr. Curtin did not say that persons should go ahead and drink soft drinks as diabetics. It is not recommended that diabetics use soft drinks. Please let it be heard. Okay. Go ahead, Kristen. The other question the person had asked. Yes.
Thank you for that.
The other question the person had asked.
I do want to say before we move on, though, because we didn't ask for the specifics. Zeros are actually okay. That is a bit of an academic debate, because zeros, what they do is that they replace the sugar with artificial sweeteners, and the evidence there is still a bit out in terms of will they have any long-term effects. So that's why I guide patients to just leave out soft drinks altogether. But in terms of impacting blood sugar levels, zeros don't have an effect. So I wasn't sure which type of soft drinks
they didn't mention it. They just said, they gave the name of soft drink, but it just said soft drinks. They never said that or otherwise or zero otherwise. Yep. All right. And the second question is, if it said it's hot, can your sugar drop?
So that's a tricky one. If you are doing things, so if you are out and you are walking around, you're engaged in activity, certainly it can drop. But what I'm more concerned about in someone who has diabetes and outside being hot is dehydration and the opposite happening, right? So with dehydration, you're going to lose body water and you're going to be concentrating that sugar level in the bloodstream. So it's really important that persons with diabetes stay hydrated, especially with these sweltering last few days.
All right. I've got another question for you on WhatsApp. I've had these two callers on the line waiting for eternity, so we'll give them a chance to chat with you, and then we'll get back to the WhatsApp. Good evening.
Sure. Good evening, sir.
Yes, please. Go right ahead. The doctors can hear you, please.
Okay. I get a lot of scratching, especially in the night. My skin scratches me. I normally get up to fast water, but I think because I just have water by my bed, so I drink water. When I get up, I drink water. But my concern is the scratching of my skin. Is that a sign of diabetes?
I'm not hearing the verb, Dr. Boyce. Is it cracking or scratching?
Scratching.
Okay, itching.
So
you're saying second caller, we can hear you, so just keep quiet until...
Yeah.
All right. Go ahead, doctor.
Yes, I was trying to verify if this is specific itching in a particular place or if this is all over, because there are many, many reasons.
Many
reasons why your skin can be itching. Sometimes it could be simple as the wrong soap. Sometimes it could be the sheets. Sometimes it could be dry skin. Sometimes it could be something internal. We could keep going on. We can have two shows about itching skin at night.
Yes.
So we would probably advise him to go to his general practitioner just to bring down those causes.
Okay, thank you very much.
But no, to answer his question, that's not a specific cause of diabetes, a specific symptom.
Okay.
All right. Thank you kindly, sir. Second caller. Okay. You take care, sir. Second caller, if you're now ready to talk to us and not your immediate family, we are willing to hear you. Go right ahead.
Hi, good night.
Yes, please.
Good night to the guests and good night to the listeners.
Right. Question, thank you.
I love to ask questions, mm-hmm. right?
Go ahead.
How does diabetes affect a woman's sex drive? And two, what food cause diabetes? And how do you feel when you have diabetes?
How do you
feel when you have diabetes?
Okay, let's start in order. So let's start with the first one. She came with him shopping this, Dr. Boyce.
All right, before you continue, let me just remind our callers to turn your radios down, sure. please, or even off when you're on the air, okay? So the doctors won't be confused hearing the reverb coming back, all right? Go ahead, doctor.
Sure. So to answer the first question, to be honest with you, we don't tend to hear much about sexual drive or sexual dysfunction in females and type 2 diabetes, but certainly there's no reason why they would be spared. There are many things that diabetes can affect, especially I would say the mental side of things as well, because persons who have diabetes might be affected from burnout, depression, that can play in, especially with women and sexual function. There's hormonal imbalances that might be present as well. So I can't say definitively that the two are linked, but I can say that there is reason for concern if someone is experiencing dysfunction and they have diabetes. Yes, it is plausible. The second question, Mr. Seeley, what was that? What was the second question?
I remember the third question about foods. What foods cause diabetes?
Oh, there was foods. Yes. What foods cause diabetes? So what foods cause diabetes? Now, I don't want to single out any particular culprit, but I will say on a whole, so overeating, so eating excess calories on the whole predispose you to diabetes. Why? Because of what Dr. Boyce and myself were talking about earlier, and that's having excess weight. All right. So eating too much of anything, don't mind it's breadfruit, don't mind it's cuckoo, eating too much of anything is always a problem, or is usually a problem. And certainly it comes back to what we would have said before, high glycemic index foods. So things that challenge the pancreas to produce more insulin would set you up to be at risk for developing type 2 diabetes. So again, your white bread, your French fries, your chips, those types of foods put you at risk. And then the last question, how does diabetes make you feel? I want some clarification, if you don't mind, caller, on what do you mean by how it makes you feel?
How do you feel? You feel when you have diabetes? I mean, how if it make you, like you'll be hungry, whatever, you know?
Okay, in this case, for this one, unless you're having symptoms, once you have diabetes, you don't feel anything unless you're having symptoms. So you feel like the average person. It's only when you're having symptoms of diabetes that you feel ill. Right?
Yes.
I want a hot dogs and red meat cause diabetes too. Hello?
Yes,
so
we heard you.
What we had said earlier, ma'am, right? So, and to answer that question again, we'll just reiterate what Dr. Curtin has said, that no particular food in and of itself causes diabetes. It's more your lifestyle, especially when we're talking about type 2 diabetes. It's more your lifestyle, overeating and eating excess of the wrong foods that leads to the development of diabetes. So we're being very careful here and not saying that any particular food causes diabetes. It's a lifestyle problem. And that, thank you so very much for calling, because that leads us right into what we want to discuss, and that is management of diabetes. Yes.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yes.
First of all, let me say thank you to that caller and take her out. But we've had another caller waiting all the while she was there. So we want to address this caller first and then we'll move on. That's fair?
Certainly.
All right. Good evening.
It is.
Yeah, I am a diabetic. I lose both of my legs. But I don't do sugar or nothing. I drink a lot of water. My body by sugar is silly. But I don't do sugar.
Okay. Sorry to hear about your legs.
Yeah.
Now, you are doing the right things in terms of you're trying to modify your diet. You're trying to make some changes. And I want to say good job for that. And I know you might, I won't put you on the spot to ask you how long you've had diabetes, but what happens is that when you've had diabetes for a while, the pancreas, so the pancreas is a special organ in the body that produces insulin, and insulin is what controls your blood sugar levels. And what happens is that when you've had diabetes for a while, the pancreas gets tired, right? And through no fault of your own, whatsoever, it gets tired and it doesn't produce as much insulin as before. So even though you're eating less sugar, you could be eating less in general, you could be exercising in terms of some upper body movements and so on, and we'll get into that shortly, you will find that your body requires more insulin if you're on insulin or higher doses of tablets, just because it's not producing as much insulin as before, all right?
I take metformin and my next one though. But I could stay home the whole day, folks feeling bad about anything.
Okay, but it's not
you
advisable.
I use a lot of water.
She couldn't remember the other medication, Dr. Curtin.
The Michael.
Okay, that's the voice.
Okay. But it's not advisable that you stay hungry for a whole day, all right? That's not advisable either.
Yeah. But I just stay hungry a whole day.
So thank you for calling.
Okay.
All right, thank you, caller.
Remember that you need to speak to your doctor. Yes.
All right.
You have a wonderful evening.
We are clear with the...
No. That's what I'm trying to intervene before you move on, you see, because we've got another caller here waiting for us. And also, I've got a question on the WhatsApp for you. So we'll take the caller first. Good evening.
Hello.
Yes, please. The doctors can hear you, please.
I thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
One of the things I'm not hearing is, to be specific, high fructose corn syrup, which is, you know, like a sugar substitute. And it's one of the things that people say they don't use sugar, but when they are using these substitutes, this is clearly a hidden sugar. And if I may, Greg, so one of the things I would like you to think about is not taking any calls before the first half an hour, because then one doesn't get to hear the guest develop their point. And if that's possible, we can, you know, start calling or you accepting calls after the first half an hour.
All right. Well, that might be a very good idea. The only drawback to that is that, and it happens already, is that 10 minutes to 7.
Yeah, at the end of the
10
show.
10 minutes to 7, a flood of calls come through. We've got to shut them off at 7, you
correct.
See?
So to speak. Yeah. You know, I mean, you don't get to hear the guests if I'm repeating myself. But the other thing is, I'm not hearing a website or email address for Dr. Boyce, and it's a while I've been trying to find her in some way. If you can.
I can give you the office number, sir. It's 248-0434. That's the office number. 248-0434. And you'll be able. Yes, you'll be able to reach me there. That's no problem at all.
All right, 248.
And we'll give Dr. Curtin's details towards the end of the show as well.
Yes, that would be excellent.
Okay. Yeah, thank you for your suggestion, sir. We really do appreciate it. And it shows that people are really, really listening to the show. And like Gretchen said, by the time we try not to take calls early in the show, by the time we get to the end, everybody's bundled up and we don't get to hear the questions. So for the purpose of education and understanding what people are feeling and thinking, that's why we're trying to take calls a little earlier. You said, Gretchen, that
all right, sir. Thank you kindly.
Had WhatsApp.
Yes. Thank you, kindly, sir. Have a good evening.
Thank you.
You're welcome, sir. Yes, there's a question for you, Doc. This question is, what causes a diabetic to retain water?
What causes a diabetic to retain water? In what
yes,
sense?
Please. That's all the...
Is this like swelling that we're talking
about? I can only assume they're talking about feet, but that's all they said on the WhatsApp. It says, good evening, what causes a diabetic to retain water? That's all they asked.
Okay, so that's a good question. Remember that we would have said, Dr. Boyce and I were talking about cousins, and we don't say specifically that diabetes is associated with leg swelling, but what happens is that diabetes can affect the heart. And if someone is developing, and this is not per se specific to the caller, but we're just talking in general first, and then we can get a little bit more specific. If the person with diabetes also has heart disease and unfortunately goes on to develop heart failure due to, you know, hypertensive heart disease or some other entity, then leg swelling could be a part of that. So you might not be seeing the leg swelling as a direct effect of the diabetes, but as an effect of one of its cousins, more or less. There are other reasons for swelling as well. They could be problems with the veins, for example, and it gets better when we elevate the legs. So we don't want to jump to diabetes as a cause for everything, even though it is linked to many things. But just be aware that we need to check the heart, and certainly in someone who has leg swelling and diabetes.
All right, Doc.
Right. Thanks for the answer.
I know that I'm interrupting you all the time, good doctor, but we've got three quick queries. We'll go through them very quickly. That's why we always ask the guests to come back. Go ahead, Doc.
Okay, so before you do that, I do have one obligation that I must fulfill.
Go right ahead.
I want to take this opportunity to say good evening to Mr. Ken Husbands.
Really? That's what it is? Really?
Yes, we are going to say good evening to Mr. Husband. And to let the listeners know that they should listen out on Tuesday evenings, anytime after 9 to VOB 92.9 FM for lyrical interpretations. There's some very high thinking going on in that show and a lot of fun. So listen in every Tuesday from anytime after 9. So let's take those three queries quickly, Gretchen.
I hope he's going to send a check to the Better Health Radio show. Yes, Doc, let me give you the queries quickly. Go ahead.
We're going to take these queries, mm-hmm. right? Yes. So what I was telling Dr. Curtin is that please know that you will be coming back to talk a little bit more about the management of diabetes. I just thought I should let you know from now.
All right. It will be a pleasure.
You want them all at one time or just individually, Doc?
No, for my sake, since I'm older, yes. One by one.
All right. What is the difference between type 2 and type 1 diabetes? I think we had this already, but quickly, tell them.
So very, very quickly in a nutshell, so type 1 diabetes is caused by an autoimmune disorder. So your body is attacking the pancreas, which produces insulin. So it's self against self, and therefore the body stops producing insulin. So you need to survive. So to survive, you need insulin. For type 2 diabetes, you're still producing insulin, at least in the beginning stages, but the body isn't responding to it like before. It's resistant to it. So those are the differences. Type 2 diabetes is more associated with lifestyle changes, or I'd want to say not the healthiest lifestyle habits. So again, I'm going to say, Dr. Boyce, your white bread, your white rice, your fries. And type 1 diabetes has nothing to do with diet at all.
All right. Good segue for the next question. Good evening. Can the doctor speak to insulin resistance, please?
I'll take that one, Dr. Boyce. Go ahead.
No, you can go ahead.
Insulin resistance. So insulin resistance, I want you to picture diabetes as a lock and key problem, all right? So in order to get the sugar from the bloodstream into the cells that need it, so your muscles, your different tissues, we need to more or less open a lock and get that blood sugar to move in. And what happens is that with type 2 diabetes, that lock gets old. There's a lot of rust on it. And we more or less then call that insulin resistance, right? And there's certain medications that we use, like that work, something like WD-40, that kind of helps to oil it, right? And let that blood sugar in. And then there are other things like exercise, my favorite thing altogether, that bypasses that rusty lock and gets the blood sugar down to normal. So that's insulin resistance. You're making insulin, yes, but your body isn't responding to it like it should.
All right. I said three.
And lastly.
I just want to address that. I said three, but in fact, four. Another one just came in. So the third one asks, what's the difference between high sugar and low sugar?
High sugar and low sugar. One is high and one is low.
Just kidding. That is the truth.
So for low sugar, when you hear somebody say, my blood sugar is low, in the office, that might mean somebody wants to go for lunch. But if you heard somebody with diabetes saying that their blood sugar is low, it means that their blood sugar is less than 4.
Mm-hmm.
And they're getting some symptoms because of it, right? So we call 4 the floor. So their blood sugar is less than 4, and they're now starting to feel lightheaded. They might be feeling dizzy.
Sweating.
They might be feeling excessively hungry, sweaty. The person that they're talking to might be saying, Pam, you're not making sense anymore.
No, yeah.
You're talking idle, right? So those are the symptoms for a low blood sugar, less than 4. And high blood sugars, honestly, Dr. Boyce, depends on the patient, right? So
yes.
Someone that is normally well controlled, a high blood sugar could be more than 10. But when we're talking emergency settings, above 16, above 30, we've even seen that. When the machine just says high, exactly. So those are when we have to move and get you into hospital or into urgent care.
All right. And the last
number
one.
Four?
Yep. This one asks, what about seizures? Are they related to diabetes as well? Seizures.
So seizures, again, are something like the itching skin, right? Can have many causes, but yes, definitely associated with diabetes on both ends of the spectrum, right? So if your blood sugars are really, really low, and we don't want that to happen, you can have a seizure. And if your blood sugars are super high, you can have a seizure as well.
All right.
And we want to make that distinction between epilepsy, which is the inclination or the propensity, likelihood to have seizures, which is a disorder in and of itself, as opposed to diabetes, high blood sugars, and low blood sugars leading to seizures. Even although diabetes can impact on epilepsy, but don't think that those persons who have epilepsy, that it's related to diabetes. Just making that little distinction there. We have
doc,
7 minutes.
Doc.
Gregston.
We appreciate the fact that they're interacting with us, so we do not want to spurn them.
Yes.
So this final one here says...
No, never.
Our final one for the time being asks the question, please ask the doctors to speak to the proliferation of yeast in females who are diabetics.
Okay, before you do that, before we're going to get to that question... Dr. Curtin had mentioned initially that one of her passions was exercise. We have not gotten the opportunity to really get into the treatment of diabetes. And you can understand, because diabetes really is a large, large topic. But for the next few minutes, Dr. Curtin, after you answer the question on yeast infections in women with diabetes, I just want you to talk a little bit about what you do in terms of exercise and the management of diabetes.
Sure. So to answer the caller's question quite quickly, what happens in persons who have diabetes is that the body gets rid of, or tries to get rid of, excess sugar in the urine, and it changes the chemical makeup of the urine. And that change in the makeup of the urine changes the environment, and that more or less becomes a going ground. The yeast are happy, right? So the bacteria and the fungi that are not accustomed to growing say, hey, we like this environment, and that's where you get this proliferation. Yeah, party time. We get this proliferation of yeast or yeast infections that occurs in persons with diabetes. So how can that be avoided? Well, manage your blood sugars. It starts there. Drink lots of water, and something that's often forgotten, good hygiene as well. Can't be understated.
Yes.
So what do I do, Dr. Boyce?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was mentioning for the ladies, cotton underwear. We try our best to stay as cool as possible down below. The further down, the lower the temperature. Try not to get too hot. Sperm don't like heat. That's why the scrotum is, you know, outside the body. It's a little cooler. And you know, you don't want the... What, Grayson, is there something going on?
Yes, we were having a discussion, read your comment. We were having a discussion, read your comment, which is not for you, though, by the way. As you realize that Mr. Clark has disappeared from the studio.
I notice.
Go ahead.
So please. Let's get back to Dr. Curtin. Yes, you were telling us, Dr. Curtin.
Yeah, so as you were saying, the management of as complex as diabetes is in of itself, the management is also complex. There are a lot of different things involved. There's diet, there's exercise, there's medication. And what I've found is that there's a deficit in the exercise part, especially in terms of prescribing it. And that's what I do for my patients. So we not only talk about exercise, but we actually sit down and we plan what type of exercise they should do, how they should do it. We discuss their goals because it's all individualized. Jane's goals is not going to be John's goals. It's not going to be Susan's goals. And we come up with a plan that's going to be, you know, tailored to suit them. And we either perform that exercise in the office, or we perform the exercise, you know, at home or wherever they choose to do it, because I believe in putting patient safety first. And then, of course, it should be fun. So why force them to do something that they're not going to enjoy and then they're not going to keep up? So I'm all about exercise. I'm all about safe exercise, and I'm all about clinical exercise.
Okay, where can we find your office? Where are you located?
So I am in the very popular, populated Black Rock, opposite Carlton Supermarket in Apple Grove, Palmerd Medical Center. The office is called Medical Kinetics. So that's where you can find me, blue and white sign. And yep, I'll be happy to see you.
And a telephone number, email address, some way that they can reach you for further information?
Sure. So telephone number 251-3047, 251-3047. And my email that I tend to answer like a phone, kristin.curtin. So that's K-R-I-S-T-Y-N, K-R-I-S-T-Y-N dot Curtin, K-I-R-T-O-N, @gmail.com.
Okay, so we have 2 minutes left. We understand that in Radio Land, time is very important. So in this last minute that you have available to you, Kristin, what's the parting thing that you wish to have our listeners hear?
I want to leave with you to do just what you're doing. Continue to take control. It's you. It's your condition. Do what you have to do. It starts with education. And after that, it's about finding the right healthcare team. It takes a village to manage diabetes. And I want you to come at diabetes from all angles. Diet, exercise, medication if you must. And, you know, a healthy mindset. We can't forget mental health.
All right. Thank you so very much for agreeing to be on the show, Kristin. And like I said before, we are going to have you back where we're going to be able to delve more into the management of diabetes using lifestyle modification, especially in the area of exercise. You have been listening to the Better Health Radio Show with me, your host, Dr. Renee Boyce. Always glad to be here with you every Sunday from 6 to 7 on VOB 92.9. Gregston?
Yes, Doc, and would you believe it? The lines are still going. Unfortunately, we'll have to reserve that call for another time. Huh? Dr. Curtin, thank you.
Yes, so kindly. I am politely going to...
Go ahead.
I'm politely going to suggest...
You're welcome, Dr. Curtin.
Politely going to suggest the management... Maybe I shouldn't be suggested this, but perhaps an extra 15 minutes for the Better Health Radio Show might not be... you know, a bad idea. Something to think about.
We will work on that.
Have a wonderful evening, Gregson.
Thank you kindly, Dr. Boyce.
Goodbye to everybody.
All right. The phone lines are still going.
Have a good evening.
Thank you, Doc. That's Dr. Boyce and Dr. Curtin. Dr. Boyce, the presenter of the show, and Dr. Curtin, the guest of the show on this occasion. Of course, Dr. Boyce's reeled Dr. Curtin into appearing again, so you'll hear from her again in the very near future. Thanks to both the good doctors, and we wish them a very good week ahead, and we'll catch Dr. Boyce, God's willing, next Sunday.